Already on the phone right now is author Brad Thor. His new Scott Harbath novel, Deadfall, is out in stores on the 25th. Hey, Brad, how are you?
I'm great, Mark. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, you're welcome. This is our fifth interview. 5 years in a row, man.
My gosh, hard to believe.
Well, it's book number 22, though, so I came in late to the game.
But you know what? I tell everybody they're like the James Bond movies. If you've never seen a Bond movie before and there's a new one in the theater, go see it. You're not missing out by not having seen the earlier one. Same thing with my books. You can jump in at any point.
That's true. So I'm driving myself crazy here, so I'm going to ask you a question about the book right off. I took some notes as I was reading the book, but I read the book about a month ago, and I've got a bad memory because I read so many books. And I wrote down tuna on pizza. And I have no idea what tuna on pizza means. There's something in the book about tuna on pizza.
Well, I lived overseas in Europe. I was in Austria, and tuna on pizza was an actual thing. People put tuna, like tuna fish. Like, you open a pouch of tuna fish, and you put it on pizza. It's a thing. I'd never known about it until I lived overseas.
It's kind of like the big debate about pineapple on pizza.
Well, anybody who puts pineapple on a pizza should be put in front of a firing squad. Let's just be clear right now. There's no place on pizza.
So I booked this interview. You know, I emailed your publicist, David Brown. I said, hey, can I get in early, make sure I get Brad on the schedule, and email me back saying, here's the date and the time. Then I emailed him back and I said, man, I don't know how I'm going to work your name into the interview, because he likes to hear his name in the interviews. So I get the finished book and I start reading it. You know, I look at every page, and then right there at the very beginning, to David Brown, my longtime friend and publicist, who was an absolute mensch, thank you for helping me climb up the mountain. So I was like, there's my David Brown way to get him into the interview.
I'm so lucky. Listen, what I do does not happen in a vacuum. I work with some incredible people at my publishing house, and I may write the book. You could write the best book in the world, but if nobody knows about it, you're not going to sell any copies. And he's an amazing publicist. He's an even more amazing human being, fabulous guy, and so I was thrilled to dedicate the book to him. We've been working for many, many years together, and I wouldn't be where I am without him.
Have you been with Atreyer for all 22 books?
Actually, it's 23. One year I wrote two books.
Oh, okay.
I did the all-female Delta Force unit in my book called the Athena Project. So, yes, I am an extremely loyal Midwestern guy. You treat me right, I'm going to stick around.
Well, that's great, because a lot of authors, they, you know, I'll be like, oh, wow, that you don't have this author anymore? No, they went somewhere else. And I'm like, well, you got to go obviously where the money is, probably. But obviously they're treating you well if you've stayed with them all these years.
Fabulous people. I couldn't imagine working with a nicer, more professional group of folks, and they've treated me very, very well, and so we've been together. It's a happy marriage.
And I know we told this story before, but you kind of fluked into this, wasn't it? You were on a train in Europe?
Yeah, I was on my honeymoon, and my wife had asked me, what would you regret on your deathbed never having done? And I said, writing a book and getting it published. And she said, okay, when we get home from the honeymoon, you need to start spending 2 hours a day, protected time, no phone, no internet, no email, make it happen. And on an overnight train ride, after I'd made that commitment to my wife, we shared a train compartment. I was a travel journalist at the time.
Yeah.
I had a show nationwide on public television called Traveling Light, and we shared a train with a lovely brother and sister from Atlanta, Georgia. They were fans of my TV show. And the sister asked me what I was going to do. I was going to go make more episodes of the TV show, and I said, I'm actually going to write a novel. And the next morning when the train pulled into the station, when we went to exchange business cards, she handed me hers. She was a sales rep for Simon & Schuster, and she said, if you write that novel, I want to read it and see if I can get you in at Simon & Schuster. And that's what happened.
Yeah, and you've obviously paid that back. I know we talked about how you helped Jack Carr out, and I'm sure there's many other authors that you've helped over the years. So you know how to pay it forward a little, too.
I think it's important. You know, we're all so close together, bumping shoulders all throughout life. The least we can do is help each other and be kind, right?
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned your wife. Does she read the books as you're writing them? Does she give you thoughts, edits? Is she like an unofficial editor for your books?
my editor at Simon & Schuster calls my wife Trish her co-editor. Trish reads the book before anybody else, and I call Trish Zorro because she has this big red pen, and she'll go through and strike huge parts of the story out if she doesn't think it moves the plot along or if I'm repeating myself. Yeah, she's my first editor, and she's my first reader. She's fantastic. She's got an incredible eye for everything. Just amazing.
Has there ever been a time, though, where you kind of didn't like the edit that she suggested and maybe it caused a little friction for a moment?
I am smart enough. I've been married now for 24 years. Yep. I keep my mouth shut. I just don't make the edit. I actually wait because my agent and my editor will then read the book. And if they comment on it, too, I'm outvoted and I will make the changes. But if they don't say anything and I really like it, then I just leave it in. I stick it in. And sometimes my wife comes back to me and says, I see what you did there. And you know what? You were right. It should stay in.
So this novel, as you mentioned in your notes, it's a little bit different for you. It's a real-time novel with Scott Harvath because you're in Ukraine during the war, and this is like a real-life novel in a sense.
It is. So my buddy Dan Brown had given me a wonderful blurb years ago and said, Brad Thor's books are as current as tomorrow's headlines. You know, I pride myself on beating the headlines. And this year, I grew up reading like Alistair MacLean, Where Eagles Dare, which was also a great movie with Clint Eastwood and Richard Burton. I love things like Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers and Fury with Brad Pitt. And I always wanted to take my hero, guy who lives in the present day and age, and put him in a similar scenario to all those stories. And so the war in Ukraine provided me a great opportunity where I've got some Americans that have disappeared who are doing aid work over there. The U.S. government thinks that maybe the Wagner Group mercenaries, there's a unit who's gone rogue in Ukraine and they are committing all these war crimes. But the U.S. can't get involved in Ukraine. They can send over tanks and bullets and stuff like that, but they can't send personnel. So Harvath has to go, my hero, has to go over by himself, join the Ukrainian International Legion, and scoop up a couple of guys to help him out and see if he can find these Americans. It has to be all off book. And it was kind of fun, but also scary to write it in real time because, you know, the book comes out on the 25th, and I had no idea if the book was going to be swept up in current events or surpassed by the news. But I think I did a really good job writing a thriller that you could still read years from now, and it doesn't matter what's in the news. It's still going to be a compelling white-knuckle thrill ride.
Brad, you always do a good job writing these books.
Well, thank you. That's my that's my goal. I'm very fortunate to be able to do what I do.
Well, and don't you sometimes get to go, you know, and go on location and scout how you're going to write stuff? Obviously, you couldn't go to Ukraine, so what was your research like in that regard?
Yeah, so if I don't go, you know, I went to Afghanistan years ago, back in 2008, actually. It's a while ago, for one of my books. If I can't go, I want to talk to people who have operated in that area, people who have seen things firsthand, people whose lives depended on paying attention to the details. And so that's what I did this time. I was able to speak with a lot of people that have been in and out of Ukraine, that have been involved with the war, that have worked with Ukrainian intelligence and things like that. To get as clear of a picture as possible of what it looked like, smelled, tasted like, sounded like, all that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you, this was pretty intense. Some of it was pretty rough. There's been some very, very evil things that have happened over in that part of the world. So some of it was difficult to research and probably even more difficult to put on paper. But I think at the end of the day, I captured it very, very well.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Scott goes into Ukraine. He's got a few people to help him, gets into a lot of conflicts. But this is Scott Harvath we're talking about. So, you know, he's going to kick some ass and take some names. And he just wants to spend some time with his woman. That's all he wants to do. He just wants a little loving. And he gets roped into this Ukraine deal.
Well, that's kind of the ongoing thing with him, is he's somebody with a moral code. He was presented this opportunity to go to Ukraine, or presented this assignment. You don't have to take it, but, you know, there's American lives at stake. We don't know if one particular American is still alive, being held hostage, whatever. And this is a guy who's got a code, and he constantly puts people before himself. He believes in the mission, believes in what he does, and he's willing to risk his life to save the lives of others. And he's also really good at laying the hurt on the bad guys. So, you know, I wanted to paint some really horrible villains in this, and there are echoes of in modern day with what's really happening with this Wagner group, there's some echoes of what the Nazis did in Poland towards the end of World War II, August, October 1944, where this Nazi SS brigade also recruited from prisons and insane asylums, the same way the Wagner group in real life from Russia has done, in Russian prisons and Russian insane asylums. And I just said, this is just the ingredients here are too ripe not to make a really compelling thriller out of.
What I also love about your books are the pop culture references. You also reference Ronin and Red Dawn in this book. I always look forward to those.
Yeah, they're pretty neat. As you and I are doing this interview right now, I just put out today on my website a list of the books and movies that were referenced in Deadfall, in my new thriller, because like you, the readers love that. They love the pop culture stuff. And that stuff about Red Dawn, about Ukrainian soldiers with cans of white spray paint and spray painting the word Wolverines on the side of blown up armored personnel carriers and Russian tanks, that actually is going on over there. There is this kind of guerrilla insurgent mindset in a lot of the Ukrainian troops. So you can see those pictures online. It's kind of cool that they're doing that.
That's bradthor.com, facebook.com, Brad Thor Official, Twitter, Brad Thor, and Instagram, Real Brad Thor. And also at your website, for people that want to get a signed copy of your book, there's a way to order books from your website as well.
Absolutely.
Hey, Brad, I wanted to ask you, are you able to walk into the supermarket, pick up some eggs, some, you know, some bread, some toothpaste, a six-pack of beer? Or is it like, hey, it's Brad Thor. Hey, it's Brad Thor. I mean, what's it like where you live? Are you able, do they leave you alone?
So Nashville is where I live now. I've been down here almost 10 years, and they are famous for not bothering people who they recognize.
Yeah.
It is a point of pride. But I will tell you something funny. The great story. So I was hiking with my wife in a park, and these two gentlemen stopped me, and they said, hey, you know, sorry, you know, we normally don't do this in Nashville, but this gentleman was with his friend, and he said, I just got to tell you, I love your thrillers. They're so good. I've read all of them, and I just want you to know you've got a real gift as a writer, and please keep writing. I'll keep reading. I was very touched. I said, thank you. I'll keep it up. Thank you for saying something. Thank you for stopping me. And we parted, and he turned to his friend. He goes, do you know who that was? And his friend goes, no. And he goes, that was Jack Carr.
Oh, wow.
His friend said he thought I was Jack Carr instead of Brad Thor.
That is funny.
He recognized me as being an author, but he had the wrong name on it. Very funny.
What did Jack say when you told him that story?
I told that story when I introduced Jack Carr at the International Thriller Writers Conference back in June in New York City. And he got a big, you know, big laugh out of that. So did the audience. Jack's got a great, great sense of humor. He loves to laugh.
Hey, we only got a couple minutes left here. Are you going to be out doing any appearances?
I'm going to do an event, a virtual thing from the Poison Pen Bookstore on
The
night of the release, July 25th. So that'll be streamed on Facebook. And I will be back on the road officially doing festivals and book signing tours and all that kind of stuff next summer. So this summer, we're going to be just doing a couple virtual things, and then I'm back in the writing cave working on, already started, next year's book.
And I know I probably ask you this every year, strikes aside in Hollywood, why hasn't Scott been on the somewhere, TV, movies? Have the right offer just not come in?
We've had a couple of offers, and in fact, we were ready to go out and start pitching to Netflix and Amazon Prime. We've got a whole team together, got to pick my showrunner, got to pick our director. We're with a studio right now in Hollywood, and the strike happened. Then, unfortunately, a week ago, we found out our lead writer, Manny, who's just a fabulous, fabulous writer. He wrote for the TV show 24 forever.
Yeah.
Did a great, two seasons ago, American Horror Story, and just a neat story about his parents, how they fled Cuba. Fabulous guy. Unfortunately, our writer died.
Yeah, I saw that.
Pancreatic cancer a week ago. Yeah, so very sad. So we lost Manny. So now we're in a holding pattern. We cannot approach new writers during the strike. So we have to wait for the writer strike to be over. We have to find a new writer. But you know what's nice? There's a lot of great Hollywood writers out there, and a lot of them are fans of my books. So we just have to wait. When the strike's over, we'll pick up a new, interview some new writers, find the one we love, get them locked up, and then we'll be able to go sell, you know, whether it's Netflix, Amazon, Paramount Plus, wherever we end up, Apple. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, they're all doing a great job with these. I mean, Jack Ryan was great. Unfortunately, that's over with, but Gray Man, Jack Carr's.
Gray Man, Mark Greene.
Yep, and Jack Carr's character, Scott Reese, and C.J. Pickett. I mean, these shows, Lee Child, those shows are just great.
It's the golden age for TV right now. So we're definitely in there. I got an A-list group behind me. I mean, I guarantee you, our director, who's a film director, who's never done TV, you've seen all his movies, and I am sworn to secrecy by the studio. I'm not allowed to announce who else. I could say Manny because Manny passed.
Yeah.
Very, very sad. I'm sadder for Manny's family and his friends than I am for losing him as a writer. I'm totally sad that he's gone, just period. But we've got a kick-ass team. We've got a real kick-ass team, and Manny was an A-level writer, and we'll find somebody else. It hurts to lose Manny, but we'll find somebody else, and then I'll be back on with you, and we'll be able to talk about the amazing team and where the show lands. But we're on our way.
I know I got to let you go, but I just have to ask, have you fantasy booked in your head who you'd want to play Scott?
You know what? I have not. I've got a couple of people that I really like. There's so many good actors out there, and a lot of it's going to come down to where they want to start. So, like, Manny wanted to start with Harvath, like, currently in the books.
Oh.
Like, Manny wanted to do last summer's book, Rising Tiger. That was going to be season one of the TV show. And we would eventually hire a younger Scott Harvath, and we'd go backwards in time to the Lions of Lucerne, my first book. So it's hard to figure out until I know for sure what it is the package we're selling. Are we selling the young Scott Harvath or the current Scott Harvath? But I've got a few. And again, the studio said, listen, we don't want you talking about who you want, because if we've got a different pick, we don't want it floating around on the internet that our guy wasn't your first choice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, Hollywood politics. I get it. I play well in the sandbox with others. I'll zip it, and I will go along to get along.
Well, Brad Thor, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I could talk to you for a couple hours, but unfortunately, I'm sure you have a lot more interviews to do. Deadfall, a Scott Harvath novel, is out in stores on the 25th. And good luck with everything, and hopefully we'll talk again in a year.
You're awesome, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.